7 minutes after 2 o'clock on what is days that's just getting better and better here in the Miami Valley. Nikki Dakota in studio with the gentleman who comes to us from Los Angeles, and I mean just fresh off the plane. He's going to be at UD for the month of February, the shortest month of the year, and I'll bet you we're going to bet it was a little longer by the end. It is my pleasure to welcome. I'm going to call you a performance poet, but you're really much more than that. Welcome to Steve Connell.
Thank you so much. So great to be here, Nikki.
You, I have to tell you that before this came around and UD said, hey, we have this really interesting, you know, ball of thought and energy and expression coming our way. Would you be interested in having him on? I'm like, yeah, let me check that out.
Let's see. What's this guy about?
What's he about? And I fell into a river of your words and your action. And I was just amazed at what you do. And it occurs to me that you created this sort of very specialized space for yourself all on your own. I'm not aware of anyone else really doing what you do.
I mean, there are definitely some. I wasn't aware of anybody doing what I do, though. So in that sense, it was. I grew up as an actor. The first, you know, spoken word I ever heard was George Carlin and Richard Pryor and Bill Cosby, like the early sort of love of storytelling and language. You know, and then as an actor, putting Shakespeare and Stephen Adley Gergis and Tennessee Williams and all these great playwrights. So language has always been part of it. But when I remember going to New Eurekan Poets Cafe in New York, which is one of the meccas for like modern slam performance poets, and hearing about this bigger scene. So there are definitely, you know, poets all over the world. Same way that, you know, comics have their clubs, there are poetry clubs. But I think the one of the things that's certainly unique to me is because we're sort of making it up as we go, the freedom there, then I fuse hip hop and theater and comedy and storytelling and dance. And, you know, it all kind of comes in whichever way I feels right, you know.
That's what I think is so sort of unique. And there's also a particular one, which if you look on YouTube, by the way, look for Steve Connell, and it's double the N's and L's, C-O-N-N-E-L-L, Steve with a V, Connell. Many, many, many videos show up. So I decided to sort by view count.
Okay.
And way up there is this absolutely astonishing piece that you did. Is it Farmers Insurance?
I don't know which one you're referring to.
Caught one.
I did a piece for Farmers Insurance, yeah.
Called Lead.
Ah, yeah. That was one of my favorites because, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, it's like the great, you know, you're moving along there and then the whole situation just folds back on itself. Tell me about that piece and how you constructed it.
Well, that was the thing. That was, I was asked to work on it by this really creative genius, he brought me in. He had this idea of, you know, how can we do what you do, sort of baffle them, confuse them. What's fun about the piece is we kind of created this Andy Kaufman like fake character, and so the piece starts in this space of your typical
convention center,
yeah, conference speaker with his PowerPoint and his, you know, Webster's Dictionary defines leadership, so, you know, complete with like a fake intro and New York Times bestseller, da da da.
So, and you had it, yeah.
Yeah, it was all fake. And then coming out and just crashing and burning. And the only two people in the room that knew it was, you know, that were in on it. Everybody else, you know, accepted from jump. And they told the CEO, you know, no matter how bad it appears to be going, don't save him. Just let him go. And so there's this great, so that was what I loved about it was this opportunity to bring in the theater. And so there's this full, you know, collapse of confidence, and that leads to this story about being lost. And you'll hear some of that in the show tomorrow night, Fluent, now that I think about it, because it's about being lost and how we get lost in choices, in relationships, in politics, in, you know, in the idea of what a life should be as opposed to the reality of what a life is. And so in that space of being lost, this conference guy looks around at all these people and say, why are we here? Why do we do what we do? And slowly I found through that story, I find my way to this point. And then the multimedia collapses, the music comes up, becomes the Braveheart speech. And it's a joy to do. And it's so, that's so funny that you found that one. But it's funny because the other thing is anybody that goes watches it, you have to, you know, people tell, you know, it says like, you got to get through the first 2 minutes. So just know it's deliberately horrific and you might enjoy it.
It's wonderful. We're in studio with Steve Connell, who is performing tomorrow night at the UD campus. He'll be doing it with their University of Dayton's Theater, Dance, and Performance Technology program. The performance is the kickoff, but you're going to be working with the kids for the better part of the month.
Yeah.
That's going to be really something. You're living on campus?
Yeah.
You're going to love Dayton.
I'm excited. I came back in, I guess, early December, just so I could, you know, for a week, just so I could kind of meet the faculty, try to get my mind around some of the students, try to figure out what it's going to look like. And that's sort of the joy of we're still figuring it out exactly, you know, what students want to be involved, how, but then, you know, I've got a concept, me and that we're gonna work through, partnering with Jerome, who's the faculty director, and Michelle Campbell, who's the runs the theater department. Mm-hmm, and we're gonna put something together. The piece we're gonna create, that we're gonna debut at the end of the month, is called Unfinished.
Ha.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, you know, it takes its name from it's a fitting title for what we're doing, but it takes its name from a line in the Gettysburg Address where it says he's talking about. He's commemorating the Gettysburg, the battle, and he says, there's nothing we the living can do to consecrate this ground beyond what those who have died here, fought and died here, have already done. It is only for us, the living, to carry on the unfinished work of the dead.
I just got to chill.
That one's Lincoln. I can't
so
take credit for
good,
that.
I know, but
still. We're going to play. One of the things I'm excited to explore is how we can take some of the Gettysburg, some of the Declaration of Independence, and sort of remix them and bring them to life, and maybe try and, you know, maybe do a slam version of it, or put some music and energy and bring these documents alive. But the other part of the unfinished for me over the last few years, probably for a lot of us, is I feel like we've gotten, we appear more divided than we've ever been.
We are. At least than I've ever sensed.
Exactly. And it's the only time, it's the first time, say, in my, you know, in this lifetime, that I've can understand for the first time how the Civil War happened, right? To understand that kind of a fracture in our union. And so the other part of unfinished, and why I took that line from Lincoln, was maybe the Civil War never really ended. It just went underground, and now all those things that we never really healed from and dealt with and made peace with, they're coming back. And that's then the challenge for us now, is to truly end the issues that caused the Civil War and that have kept us from being the America we deserve to be and want to be and can be.
Something that I thought ran through a thread that was a through line in your work is this notion of self-examination, mm-hmm. like looking inside and really, and I'm like, you know, it was like late at night and I'm like, Steve, dude, I don't have the energy for that right now.
I hear you.
It's an invitation to examine.
Yeah.
And not just certainly your own heart, but also, you know, how your heart overlaps and intersects with others and to be mindful of these ripples that we're continually leaving, this wake that's always behind us, and we're crossing other wakes. And it's nice to be reminded of that, but I did not have time to really take inventory last night, but I do appreciate that in your work very much.
Yeah, it's certainly part of both that idea of how I think art is a great tool to show us how we're all connected, right? And I think in focusing on how we're all the things that connect us, that make us human first and foremost, we then sort of can maybe move through that space of what sets us apart. And then as an artist, I always feel like, you know, it has to start with laying myself bare to an extent, you know, revealing my struggles, weaknesses, fears, frailties, strengths, etc., so that then the audience can understand, all right, well, now everything's on the table, right? But it's not he's up there pointing at us. It's we're here in this space, you know, laughing, learning, loving, pushing, whatever, you know. And it changes, you know, from the show to show. Sometimes it's love poems. Sometimes it's family drama.
Will you give us a little sample of,
sure.
Do you call them pieces? I was struggling to what do you call a particular collection of words?
In this case, I call them pieces, sometimes poems, sometimes pieces, latest work, you know, as long as we're clear on what we're talking about, I don't get too precious, but yeah, poems for sure. Why don't I do, there's two that are in my mind. Why don't I do the heroes one, the one
great.
Finally grateful.
Excellent.
So let me see. It's interesting to do it in, you know, with the mic. So I will close my eyes.
All different headphones.
Wherever you are, you know, light your incense, pour a glass of wine, turn off your cell phones. I remember being a 9-year-old boy reading Superman by flashlight. And every night I would turn out the light and with eyes closed tight, I would pray. Dear God, DC, Marvel, Stanley, please understand me. No disrespect to my family, but they didn't make me strong enough to do everything that I need to do. I want to be like everything that I read, and you have to help. Please make me better than myself. And one morning I woke up knowing that it would never work. Yeah, I was disappointed, you know, because I was going to have to be me all day. And that morning I climbed up into my mother's lap and I asked her, I'm never going to have superpowers, am I, mommy? She leans down. She whispers in my ear, there is no Superman. No Wonder Woman or the like. No Ronald McDonald. No Mickey Mouse. No magical land of Oz. What about Santa Claus? No, my son. There is no Mr. Claus. And with my little boy lungs of steel dented just enough to prevent me from ever taking full breaths again, I vowed I henceforth put an end to believing. I do hereby resolve to be nothing special. I will be flushing my Justice League chewables down the toilet at exactly sunset. I will set ablaze my superhero underoos. And despite the fact that it was 9 a.m., I bid her and my father good night. And went to bed. At exactly sunset, I emerged from my room, arms carrying all the superhero underpants my little boy arms could, passed my mother in the hall and asked her, pardon me, mommy, might you know where we keep the kerosene with that? She sat me in her lap and like a surgeon whispered words to remove my damaged lungs, roll them flat, reshape them as a bird, then put them back so whenever I inhale now, I'm lifted. Slightly. She whispered, my little baby with such big eyes, though I take from you your mythology, I replace it with something even better, for what I give you now is real. She tells me, there are heroes you will not find in comics. Somewhere there is a man in mismatched socks wearing a suit he got at the Salvation Army, a dented clarinet wrapped up in newspaper, sitting on his lap, a gift for his young daughter who said she wanted to learn to play. Social worker promised, I'll get her the gift if you get it to me by 6. It is 6:11. There was an accident on Wilshire. The man is humming Silent Night to keep from crying. My mom tells me Santa Claus is not a fat guy in a beard. It's that man in mismatched socks, and it's 30 years past her lap now, but I finally understand. So forget X-ray vision, magic rings, invisible jets. I no longer want to web sling through sunsets or leap buildings in a single bound. Not anymore. I am finally grateful for my flesh, bones, and bruises, nervous laughter, migraines, the ordinary shortness of breath. My mom She runs this fallen shelter for teen addicts, and she doesn't pray for superpowers at night. She prays for somebody brave enough to put $30,000 into her hand so she can keep her shelter open, and she hasn't found that somebody to give her the money. So every week she takes her own paycheck, donates it to herself, and the doors don't close. And she can afford to do that so long as my dad, 70, just diagnosed with Parkinson's, continues to teach at least 3 classes a week, and he does not pray for superpowers at night. He prays for a cure. Oh, my parents' lives have given me this lesson. Son, you read Superman backwards, because the fight for a better world begins when you move out the phone booth as Clark Kent. I get it now. My mom, she wasn't telling me there's no Santa Claus. Just that he shops at JCPenney with her credit card. She wasn't telling me there's no Superman. Just that he sits across from me at the dinner table every night. She wasn't taking away my hero. She was just refocusing my faith. My heroes now are the ones with the trembling hands, the ones not invincible who still fight the bad guys. It's this woman with the kryptonite lip gloss and the dry mouth who still finds the words. And nowadays, it's these photos of Dr. King to keep me up nights, undercover with flashlights. But it's not Dr. King that I'm looking at. I'm looking at the people around him. I am studying the faces of the ones unsung who risked their lives as well for the belief that their better world demands it. The mother of four who works the graveyard shift at Denny's, that's Superman to me now. Firefighter who makes his wife a widow so some stranger will live. That's Batman. The young girl who wears her scars about her like victory ribbons. That's Wonder Woman. The guy next to Martin is the Green Lantern. The Justice League is we, the quiet mighty who swallow struggle like vitamins and keep on. My mom is Santa Claus and my dad is the Flash. These are my heroes, for they teach me what my comics could not. It's not heroic to take a bullet when you know you can't be killed. Being bulletproof is easy when you're bulletproof.
Steve Connell. He's in town performing tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the University of Dayton. Yep. That was so great. Steve Connell, creates.com, by the way, is a portal into the many facets of this jewel. It is a poetic conduit and then some.
And then some.
That's Steve Connell, double N, double L, S-T-E-V-E, C-O-N-N-E-L-L, creates.com. Go check that out, and you will be glad you will. Well, I like your parents. Clearly, you have wonderful parents.
Yeah, I have incredible parents. They've done me well.
Were you born and raised in L.A., or is that just where you settled?
A little bit outside, about an hour outside of L.A. is a small town called Thousand Oaks, California.
It has to be beautiful.
It is pretty beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's doing all right. It's right near where the Thomas fires that have been.
Oh, yeah.
So it's right near there. So
you didn't get it, though.
No. We were good. Some friends were affected that lived in Ojai were affected a little bit, not in terms of damage, but terror. They had to evacuate in the middle of the night and wonder if their house
and then the mudslides.
And then the mudslides, which actually did worse. It's a lot going around. This weather thing, we gotta figure that out.
Honestly. Yeah. And we had 60 degrees on Sunday and 22 on Monday.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I looked last night as I was packing before I flew in on the red eye.
What kind of clothes?
Yeah, exactly. I saw no suns, all cloudy, cloudy and snowflakes in the weather reports. I was like, oh boy, but that's good. We'll make it hot inside. That's the exciting thing is coming out to do this the residency. We don't know exactly how it's going to unfold. What we're going to pull from, but it's an opportunity, an incredible opportunity as an artist to get to sort of go off grid and to some extent block out the rest of the projects and responsibilities and just go in on this piece. When they asked me what Michelle Campbell, she asked, what do you want to work on? And I had to ask, if I'm going to take a whole month off. And so this piece, just as an artist, looking at the world right now, feeling like, you know, we need voices that can make sense of things and
I'm
trying to be part of
that. Super glad that you're going to take. Did you say the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence? Constitution.
Declaration of Independence
with the Gettysburg Address.
Yeah.
So I'm so grateful to Lin-Manuel Miranda for for reaching into the past and making it real and tangible to us here now, and putting human faces on these men and women that had a vision of a country.
Sure.
And I've been so. It's nonstop. It's this one late night comedian. Somebody said that this last one year feels like dog years. Like there's been so much that has packed in there. And just not to get too far off on the conspiratorial end, but it seems like it's super important that we have a sense of that we are the strengths of our institutions. It is Vladimir Putin's highest hope to tear down our FBI and tear down our CIA. That would be his greatest victory. And through little strange puppetic machinations, he's making us do it ourselves.
Sure. Well, I mean, it is that saying, when we stop living like, to the beliefs, the principles of what America is, then the terrorists win, right? And that idea that says we either live in fear or we live in freedom, and the idea of democracy is that it challenges you, right? Because it's about disagreement, but it's about disagreeing forward, right? And it's about moving through things. And there are people absolutely who don't want the America that it was set out to be, but want their version of it. And that's,
I feel like
that's
we were
where
bewitched into believing that that there's no loyal opposition. When I was a kid, I always heard about the loyal opposition. You may differ, but these people are genuine in their beliefs, and they're genuinely good people, generally speaking.
Sure.
But I don't get any sense of that at all, just not in a broader term. Of course, I try to be a good citizen, a good person, as I move about the face of the planet. But this notion of honoring your opponent's perspective seems to be complete. It's just vilification.
Exactly. I mean, there's no question that over the last, seems like a few decades, last 10, 20 years, it's become more and more, if you don't agree with me, then screw you, right? It's not an idea. It's just our side, your side, liberal, conservative, us, them. And that's a dangerous place to be, because then leadership is about standing up for what you believe, not about keeping your job. It's not about saying the things that please the constituents that vote for you. It's about in those moments when you're all alone with just you and your conscience, a picture of your child or your parents, the things that matter. How do you serve them? How do you stand up for them? And what's important? And it's tragic to see how easily what's important becomes reduced to my guy, your guy, stay in power, even if I disagree. That's
it's become
a scary
thing. It heard to me that it's like a sports team. People are for the Cubs no matter what.
Right.
And then every 100 years they'll actually bring home a pennant. And and all that time, it's like the struggle of even being on the underdog team has something to it. So I sort of think like people have picked a team, and no matter what, no matter what they do, can be forgiven.
Right. And which is and you would think the team would be, in this case, would be America. Humanity, it would be, those would be the teams we would stand by. Decency, integrity, like the idea that America is isolated from the world. So the world, just the nature on an environmental level, it's clear we have to move as a people. And it can be challenging, right? But it's got to happen, and you got to put life over money, and figure out how to navigate that space.
I'm always drawn to buoyancy in anything, and there's definitely a sense of buoyancy in what you do, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
You're not just condemning, and I can't remember the famous old quote, rather than curse someone's darkness, light a candle.
Sure.
That's definitely there. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, the piece that I'm doing tomorrow night, Fluent, takes its name from a piece I don't know if we have time for it, but
we do.
Because that's, it's what we're talking about and trying to articulate just that feeling of, that as a country and that we're getting lost, like you said, in this partisan bickering, trying to make sense of the real conversation that, that it should be happening. You know, the ability for all of us to say, hold on, hold on. Like, to me, no matter what you think of Trump, where you come down, there's this sense that what either way, what this election is like a heart attack to the body America.
Yeah.
And we are in a position to say, yo, if we keep on like we are, we're going to destroy ourselves. Are we going to be strong enough to sort of figure out a different way forward? And that's the question for all of us. And what's exciting is seeing, you know, just like when there's a sickness, the white blood cells, the antibodies, they start moving. And so you see that, I think, in the activism, in the Women's March, in the young people that are not just signing up to vote, but signing up to run for the first time.
So heartening on all sides.
That kind of energy is exciting. And I think people that say, yo, we're better than the way than our discourse. We're better than, you know, these cannot be our best and brightest, the leaders that we have right now. That can't be the height of what we're capable of. And I think we right now you see people sort of recognizing somehow we've gotten off track and wanting to get back on track.
I want to. This
piece, you know, with that in mind, it's called Fluent. And I hope you enjoy it. And it's also, I have a new band called Kill the Poets, and you can hear this on, I believe it's out, we just released a demo version of this on SoundCloud, killthepoets.com, and you can check us on Insta as well. So you can hear this piece with music. As I swallow. They say Eskimos have 40 words for snow. Islanders can read the language of the ocean. The Lakota tribe, they tell us, can speak to the land in its native tongue. I think that Americans have libraries full of words for pain. How to break a man. How to kill somebody. How to hate or fear or run from others. And identity politics and deplorables and nasty and immigrants, birther, liberals, conservatives, thugs and illegals and terrorists and radical Islam. It's all just words. We've got to keep us from dealing with being hurt and raw and struggling, lost and wanting, savage, falling down, getting up, fragile, terrified and human. Ultimately, all of us are goddamn human that we hate each other because the alternative to love is so damn scary. It's opening ourselves up to being vulnerable. It's the intimate nature of knife fights. When you fear nothing, there is so much to be afraid of, and fearing everything is the surest way to make it home each night. So we sell our soul to keep our body because F you if I'm wrong is better than F me if I'm right. Is that why we greet each other with a middle finger where a handshake used to be? I mean, how else to deal with the fact that so many people lately, they seem to be dying with their hands up or their backs turned or their cheeks othered, trusting. I mean, better to be the ones who put their guns down second, so too few put their guns down at all. When? I mean, I'm asking, when? When did we lose the ability to listen and talk and disagree forward? Why is it a sin now to say, I'm sorry, I messed up, I'm still learning, yo, I was wrong? I mean, how does it seem to come so easy now to say that your pain, it doesn't apply to me? When did we agree to put a wall around our morality that everybody pays for, as if our empathy has borders and it can only go so far, as if kindness and mercy was a resource we were slowly running out of, as if safety is a reward now for being quiet, as if our humanity diminishes the more we apply it, so we've learned to use it sparingly and with restraint? Why? Why are we suddenly so willing to let the limits of our fingers be the limits of our love, as if I have to touch you to respect you and love you or honor your customs or empathize with the way that your person is scraped along the earth the same as mine? Why must we be so eager to pick a side that we forget about the cost, then cheer on our own victory, forgetting someone else has lost? Why does withheld fruit taste sweeter than shared? There's so many words now to be a coward, and we seem fluent in the ways of being scared lately.
Lately, it appears that as a people, we have forgotten what it feels like to drop nuclear bombs, and we're getting curious again, as if we're needing a refresher course on slavery and revolution, and we're starting to get a taste again for rounding people up. It feels like savagery and bloodlust is always with us, in a couple people, you know, or a city rising up, felt but unnoticed, like tiny tremors in the earth. But maybe our DNA has disaster in it. Maybe that's why it comes so natural to us at birth to speak in pain. Perhaps that explains why it seems like every 80-100 years or so, as that pressure inside us builds, our hearts start to beat like tectonic plates shifting and knocking each other down. It becomes easier than lifting. When that happens, the Richter scales that measure our humanity start tipping in a certain direction. Maybe genocide is genetic. That's why it happens every age. Maybe we're growing dangerous like a forest when the fire is begging to be raged. Maybe that's why whenever someone's talking now, we seem to feel afraid. I'm asking, do we always have to be so near death to have a near-death experience? Do we really have to lose life to know that it is precious? Does a civil war really need to happen twice?
Steve Connell, he's at UD tomorrow night. Show gets underway at 8 o'clock. You can look into tickets at tickets.udayton.edu. Yeah, the show is the first part of an arc of residency.
Yeah. I mean, basically, you know, we're going to kick it out a little bit, just kind of launch the month, you know, basically announce to Dayton and Ohio that Steve Connell's in the building.
And there'll be a performance at the end.
That's exactly. So this is what I'm going to do tomorrow night is kind of work. I'm working through a brand new show that is, you know, a different aspect of looking at the stories we tell, you know, and the idea that the language that we use, the words that, you know, we seem to discard or denigrate, the fluidity with which we take meaning and reject it or reclaim it, you know, is something to be concerned about. You know, the idea of alternative facts and fake news, the idea that we've, because of the way in which we engage and ingest culture now, we are all basically, it's like a salad bar of ideas and beliefs, and you can pick and choose what you want and then agree to disagree. And there's nothing, there's no foundation perhaps to keep us anchored to. So, and then this idea that stories like, you know, Trump and Obama are great examples of, they told stories that resonate, right? Like the stories, like the beliefs, like the policies, those stories resonated in a way. And then you realize ultimately on some level, that's always how it happens. And so the future is won to some degree by the storytellers. And if we don't like the story of who America is right now, or the story of who humanity is, or the story of who immigrants are, the story, you know, then it's upon us to raise better storytellers, tell better stories that resonate humanity in the direction we want to go. So that's what the piece tomorrow starts. And part of it is to let the community know, part of it is to let the students, the school, kind of get a sense of, you know, what we're doing. And then, we go to work, roll up our sleeves, and we're going to spend a month trying to inspire and flush out a new show. And wherever we get in a month's time, we're going to do three shows at the end of the month. Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
Journey. And with people you're just about to meet, and where you guys going to find commonality and riff on that. What fun.
Yeah.
Speaking of the bookends with tomorrow's performance, again, that's tickets.udayton.edu if you'd like to get yourself there in person. Totally lost track of what I was going to say there. I didn't say the website. I think it was actually, I remember. You've done a lot of TED Talks. There are different sort of varietals of those. There's one particularly that I saw with a gentleman you work with a lot. His name is Sekou Andrews.
Sekou Andrews, the great.
How'd you meet him, for starters? And then I want to talk about the notion of bookends.
We met on the scene. I'm the, you know, in 2001, 2002, I mentioned earlier, sort of out of UCLA, I was brought to New York, and I had sort of knew of this one place, the New Eureka Poets Cafe, and I dreamed one day I'm going to go and win a slam there. And then, lo and behold, when I was brought to New York to work on my first one-man show, I lived three blocks from the New Eureka. And so,
Exactly.
So once I got up the nerve to actually perform, I won the slam. They told me, you should do nationals. And then that just opened everything up. So I got back to L.A., and one of the best open mics in the country, if not the world, the Poetry Lounge, is on Melrose and Fairfax, and that's, you know, they pack 400 deep every week. So I started going every single week, and that energy changed, you know, the trajectory of my life. And there were many poets. NQ, Sekou, at the time he was Sekou the Misfit. Now he's Sekou Andrews. He's a grown man now. But there were, you know, incredible poets. I mean, a lot of the ones that won the Tony on Deaf Poetry Jam on Broadway. I mean, just an amazing renaissance of poets. And so I slammed. I was the 2002, 2003 back-to-back Hollywood LA slam champion. And then we went Team LA and then Team Hollywood in 2004. Team LA won 2003 National Championship, 2004 Hollywood National Championship. So, yeah, we were
to the moon,
baby. And then so that's how he and I started. And then we toured. There was an audition. Norman Lear, the great Norman Lear, owned a copy of the Declaration of Independence. This is where,
Did you get to see it?
I did get to see it. Actually, yeah, there was a brief period where it ended up at my house.
I'm 2 degrees of separation from the Declaration of Independence.
And that's the interesting thing is, so it was me and several poets that toured, and I was hired on as the creative director initially, along with the sort of lead poet. And the first, Norman said, well, who are we going to work with? And Sekou was the first one we brought in. And so we've been, you know, close, forever, you know, before we knew each other.
I suspect that you guys were adopted into the same family. There's some sort of a fraternal, harmonic
resonance
between
the two of you. Without question. My girlfriend, he's one of my soulmates. You know, there's certain people that are on a different level, and he's without question, you know, not personally, but also professionally. It's like, you know, it's like John Lennon and Paul McCartney are incredible,
right?
But the Beatles is something else, and there's an energy when the two of us perform together that's unlike anything I've had the privilege to know.
I will ask advise our listeners to look up the piece. Was it called Ted Med?
Yeah, we did.
Ted Med 2010. You do a piece on death.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
I've been depressed.
Yeah.
I get the seasonal affective disorder, and then I can't quit reading the news.
Yeah.
And then, you know, other little personal, you know, got a splinter kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I just
sure.
all balled up. And
yeah.
It's been nice because it's, you know, the light's beginning to return. So that's helping me sort of pull myself up.
Sure.
But watching that just really
good.
Right on.
Yeah. It's, I mean, again, one of my favorites. Yeah. After, you know, Ted was the initial. Ted Med was the first. Sort of became the next one where it was Ted, but it was all focused around medical things. And then all the TEDx's sort of was the next wave where it's at now. So Ted, then Ted Med, then TEDx, and now it's Ted everything. But yeah, we did that. I think at the Kennedy Center.
Oh,
and where that's where it was. It was amazing.
Wonderful.
And they asked us to look at how, you know, because we don't, a lot of, especially, I mean, everybody struggles to talk about death or to talk about it while we're still alive with the people we care about, you know, as people get older or just, you know, just in general, how, you know, it's such a part of life, but it's a hard part to talk about.
Actually, truly the definition of life.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. Without death, there is no life.
And it just, I just want to say that it's brilliant.
Thank you.
And comforting in a very human way. And how you two work together on it is just absolutely delightful. You should search Steve Connell, C-O-N-N-E-L-L, and Sekou, S-E-K-O-U, Andrews, and then put Ted Med, one word, and that one was in 2010. I just happened to remember that.
We have a couple. There's also one about sort of revolutionaries and where the sort of, you know, this idea, similar to the piece I did earlier, the Heroes piece, right? We grow up and we think, well, of course Martin Luther King did that. He's Martin Luther King. I'm just some guy, right? This idea we deify people and then absolve ourselves like, of our own greatness. And so the idea that everybody that's ever done something amazing was just another person that's alive. So we all can do that. And that's what the piece is about, is like a little girl, Harriet Tubman, a little boy, Malcolm X, you know, that kind of thing. So where they come from and how we can raise new revolutionaries to help us forward. So both those pieces you can find, plus a ton of others. So
that all, I hope you can get back out here to Antioch before this is all said and done. The Horace Mann, one of the first presidents of the college here, had a motto that was, be ashamed to die without winning some victory for humanity. And I have been saying that to my children since they were born.
Yeah.
And also just a little factoid, since you're not from around here, Rod Serling, who did Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Attended college here. And
really?
Yes, and went on to do that. And there's an episode of an elderly professor looking back on his life and thinking that he's made no mark, and he's visited by these youth that make him understand otherwise. And he goes for a walk, and there's a picture, a statue of Horace Mann, and it shows to be ashamed to die without winning some victory for humanity, which is our motto.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
It's a good way to go.
Yeah. Now, is that? But that's the connection. Is Rod Serling, as a student here, had seen that, so that's he was moved to involve it in the show.
Yes, there is no such statue, but he created that for
Let's get that statue. Come on,
wow,
Antioch.
I like the way you think.
We're here today. Yeah, you know, come see the show at Dayton. But also, this is a pledge drive. We need a statue of Horace Mann. I'm not leaving till you pledge
at least one statue.
Yeah, it could be paper mache. It doesn't have to be a lot. It just has to be made.
I like the way you think. It is Steve Connell.
Yes, ma'am.
Creates. .com.
Please.
Which is a great, great site. I mean, to say, just a really wonderful name for it, too. SteveConnellCreates.com leads you to a lot of information. And also, if you just get on YouTube and search Steve Connell, that's C-O-N-N-E-L-L, and any of those things that come up.
Any of those, and check the Insta, check the Facebook.
I don't do Instagram. I'm going to have to start.
Yeah, you got to get on. I'll be your first follower. There you go. But and like I said, Kill the Poets. And there's a piece some of you may have heard. I've been the piece that's had the most success is a piece called of late is a piece called Lions. We Are the Lions, that looks at.
That's a chilling and excellent piece.
The interesting thing in terms of it's about sort of. As I created it, partnered with the YWCA, and David Fichette directed it, and it was this idea about, we look at violence against women, rape, abuse. It's traditionally we've decided it's a woman's issue because she's getting raped and beat up, and the poem is about the idea and the intention with the poem was the idea of saying it should either be a human issue or a male issue because. Men are the ones doing the majority
of the
raping and the abuse.
Isn't it so funny that our first thought is, well, it's your problem.
Yeah.
You woman.
Right.
Yeah, sorry about your luck there.
Yeah. Well, that's because it's problems are hard to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's like easier to avoid or come up with solutions to step away because it's uncomfortable to get into some of this stuff. You look at instead of dealing with shooters, guns, gun violence, we're teaching kids what to do when a shooter's on campus. So that's as opposed to figuring out how to keep shooters off campus. And so it's the same thing, right? Instead of dealing with what is it inside us in our culture that's prone towards violence or what's led men to think that masculinity is somehow linked to denigrating women. And that's so at the heart of that is this piece trying to say, ultimately, racism, for it to truly end, white people have to be involved in the dismantling of it. And for sexism and violence against women to truly end, men have to step up and participate and say time's up and say, I hear you saying me too. There's too many people saying me too. So we better look. I mean, because that's the crazy thing. If the statistics are right, that women, most women have been abused, harassed, dealt with it or gotten lucky, et cetera, then a lot of us know men that have been involved, right, in some way.
Mm.
And we have to figure out how to then re-engage to, and you're seeing, this power, the power of women right now stepping up in such a bold, powerful way, which I think a lot, too. I think, most people wanted to or not, they thought Hillary was going to win. And I think there was a sense of this powerful rising of feminine energy, and the idea of being told suddenly, when we all were sort of moving in that direction and preparing ourselves for, wow, we're going to have a woman as the president. Suddenly that it didn't happen, right? And Trump won, and that was put away. And to be told, hey, put that away.
Right.
It doesn't apply right now. It's too strong. It was too powerful.
The
and
momentum,
I think that's,
you can't stop a train. It has to slow it down.
And especially when the person saying stop it is someone who is participating in the oppression of women, right? Somebody who you clearly see doesn't respect females, female energy, you know, et cetera. So then it makes it even harder. So in a good way, again, like that heart attack, there's suddenly women saying, no, no, we're not stepping down to you at all, and maybe not again anymore. So that's, anyway, that piece, We Are the Lions, is you know, I performed it at the UN, and we're starting to do a bunch of new pieces coming out over the next 9 months. So check that one out.
Keep this up. Keep this up. Keep addressing issues. Keep not damning the darkness, but lighting a candle.
Yes, ma'am.
Because it's meaningful and it helps. It's sort of like the mission of what we do here. So, like, what is radio? It's we're sharing stories. For my part, we share stories through song. For the news part, we share stories through the actual stories of our lives. We're training people in the Miami Valley to make radio. It's been, I think it's like our ninth year of classes and these people continue to contribute stories. So when we share stories, when we see something from someone else's perspective, which the spoken word is such the natural vessel. I mean, you can read, you can watch, but to hear the human voice tell their story.
Well, and what I love about what you just said too is to understand that language is alive and poetry is part of us, and poetry lives in us. And you know, we were raised to think, most of us were introduced to poetry as, you know, the language of old, dead, white men. And it's something removed from us. It doesn't speak to who we are. It doesn't speak in our voice. It doesn't speak with our slang. It doesn't speak with our passion to our issues. And that's not true, right? Because poetry is just people, you know, trying to scrape words together to say, are you feeling this? Are you seeing this? What do you think about that? And finding each other in that darkness you refer to, and when they do, that light occurs.
Yeah. He's performing tomorrow night at 8:00 on the UD campus.
Come out.
Do come out. It is tickets at udayton.edu. I'll say that again. Tickets.udayton.edu. Or you can go to Steve Connell's site, STEVECONNELL. Did I get that right?
You got it right. I'm impressed. CONNELL. Just do it.
.com. No, creates. You got to put creates on there, which is pretty cool because it's like kind of a noun and also kind of a description of action. Do you want to do that piece, We Are the Lion? I hate to put you on the spot because we talked about it so much. Did we spoiler alert it?
No, but let me see. Let me see if I can find it. You stall for a second. I'll see if I can.
We will.
I think
you know
right
what
here.
I can do as an underwriter? You're listening to Member Supported 91.3 WYSO. And we are supported by our contributing listeners, and we thank you very much for that. We're also supported by Ohio's Hospice, an affiliation of your local not-for-profit hospices. Ohio's Hospice affiliates have more than 30 years of experience with hospice-certified staff, available 24/7, along with grief support for the entire family. Information is online at ohioshospice.org. We're also supported by the Yellow Cab Tavern in downtown Dayton, hosting a singer-songwriter showcase every Thursday featuring local musicians performing live in a pared-down setting. This week features Personal Pain with Golden Guy and his Bucking Bloviators. This is an all-ages show. More information at yellowcabtavern.com. We're in studio with Steve Connell, steveconnellcreates.com. Stand by here. Listen, we're going to take just a little quick break, and we'll be right back. So many good words, so many good stories to share, and not quite enough time. A little something from Bell X1, the progenitors of Irish disco, according to them. Irish awesome, according to me. It's been a delight to be in studio with you. We just have a minute left before we're doing Terry Gross and Fresh Air.
All right.
Steve Connell creates. I can't forget that part because that's the magical part of it. SteveConnellCreates.com.
It is.
And you've agreed that we can give away a pair of tickets to the show tomorrow at 8.
Yeah. Just if you win them, show up, let me know afterwards. Give me a wink or a nod so I can say hello to you in person. And thank you for coming out based off this interview.
We will take caller number 9 at 769-1998. 769-1998. That's a local call, 937-769-1998. And we'll send you to the show tomorrow at 8 o'clock at UD. Big thanks to all the great work they do out there. And
yes.
Steve Connell, what a delight. I'll keep following you now.
Please do. Yeah. We'll do updates throughout the month, let you know how it's going. So that's the thing. In addition to tomorrow, at the end of the month as well.